Good morning, everyone. Steve just stood up and he said, "Speak up." So I'm hoping that you can hear me okay when I'm sharing with you this morning. And I wanted to address a couple things before we started. I've noticed that there's a delay with the audio and the video, so that can be really irritating to watch. And so I worked on that last night, and I'm not sure if I've rectified it or not, but we're aware of it and we're trying to make it happen. So thank you for bearing with us on that. And I wanted to echo, Cindy, when you talked about everybody that serves us, I wanted to thank everybody. Each Sunday morning, this is a real blessing to do. And that includes also not just the people that are working here today, but it also includes you because, you know, we're all part of a great whole. But I also wanted to correct you, Cindy. I don't know if you get corrected too often, but you're not just the gal that reads stuff. You've been here a long time. And yep. I don't know if a lot of you remember back in the days of Bob and Charlotte, and Victoria was doing the administrative work, and everything changed. And Cindy stepped up and said, "I'm going to make sure this stays going." And so she stayed in there. And then when things went sideways again and this pandemic hit, you stepped right up. And you are, in many ways, not just the person who reads stuff on Sunday morning, but you are the wisdom keeper for our church. Everybody knows if we want something, yeah.
Make it be warm.
Everybody knows if we want something, we go to Cindy because she knows just where it's at. She knows the history of it, and she's got an excellent memory, which is good news for me. Yeah. We got a lot of good people here, you know, just.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yes, you're welcome. Well, you know, that kind of leads us into our meditation in a way, and I thought the very same thing that you had said about the song. You know, that song is, that was a mantra. When we sing something over and over, it helps our mind to get into a groove. And so I wanna keep that going because that's important. Sometimes we come to meditation and we've got these busy American minds and they can be thinking all kinds of stuff and be full of all kinds of static, and you know what that feels like. So I invite you now to come to your meditation, forget everything that's been talked about, that's been said. Take a deep breath in, please fill up your lungs, and at the top of that breath, squeeze up all of those muscles in your body that you can find, and then release it. And maybe do that one more time, a nice deep breath in. Squeeze it up, purposely clenching, and then let it all go. Certainly bring your eyes closed if you like to do that. And practice eyes closed, but so gently that you can almost see between the slits of your eyebrows. Notice where your vision of your eyes is and see if you can move it to a single pointed focus at the point between the eyebrows, as if you were gazing upward just above the horizon towards something. And let's say that what this inner gaze is gazing towards is your higher self. The you that knows just what to do. The you that has all of the answers. And the you that when we get quiet, we can hear. The still small voice. The voice for God. With that inner gaze fixed keenly, let your inner ears open. And now let your heart center open in all directions. And then we begin the mantra, "I am one with the heart of the mother." I am one with the heart of love. I am one with the heart of the father. I am one with God. I am one with the Mother. I am one with love. I am one with the Father. I am one with God. I am Mother. I am love. I am Father. I am God. I am. I am. I am. And then as we begin to come back from this meditation, beginning with the I am, the presence of pure being, and then coming back through nature, the Divine Mother, Mother Earth, all living beings held in their perfect harmony, through the heart of love. All that we see, all of this beautiful love, once an idea, the Father. And through the heart of the Father, all is brought into being. And we see that all is God, and that I am one with the heart of God. We're going to get ready for another song here, so you can go ahead and stay in your meditation, or you can gently bring yourself out and open up your eyes at any time. Thank you for that beautiful song. And hello, everybody, again, and welcome back. We never know how many people are out there watching. There could be 10 and there could be 100. We don't know. So hello to everybody. And, you know, if you ever come to this church, I know some of you haven't been actually to our physical building, but many of you have. And we said a lot of times on Sunday morning, it's you that makes up the consciousness of this day, of this now moment. And so that is still very true right now, that you, being a part of this, make the consciousness of what is going to happen and what is brought forth. That's how important you are, so thank you. And what is it about this power of now that brings us into the moment? There's so many things, isn't there? And do we ever even have anything to worry about? I mean, really, do we? When you think about it, and what am I worried about when I'm worried? I want to share an experience with you, and I've shared it a little bit before. It's about this place that I like to go, a little hiking trail. And I always have these amazing experiences at these trails. And one of the reasons is because it's the forest. And the forest is alive with the presence of all these beings. Some of them I can see and some of them I can't. The weirdest thing happened. It was such a wonderful thing. It was during the smoke, and there was all this smoke in the air, and everybody's talking about not going out in it. I don't follow directions very well. And I needed to go in the woods, and I knew it. It's one of the ways that I get present. And so as I'm walking down this long trail, there's this place that you park your car, and then you walk down a long hill, and it levels out. And then it levels out, and it goes into a place towards a river. And the river has many facets to it. But before you go into this place, there's a giant tree. It's this gorgeous tree, and it always greets me. And then off to the left, there's like a marshy swamp full of skunk cabbage and all these beautiful giant green leaves, things growing. But this day, I looked up and there was another tree. And this tree had moss dripping off it, but not just moss dripping off it, it had a fairy alive staring at me. I don't know if you notice fairies, but I certainly do. I don't just believe in them, I talk with them and get directions from them. And sometimes they freak me out a little bit because at first it's jarring when a fairy begins to interact with you. But this fairy was really cool looking. I mean, he was part of the tree. You know how it is. He's part of the tree, yet he's got his own entity. Anyway, he's just looking at me, and he's got jowls and what could be a beard, but it's all green, and he's definitely got eyes, and he's looking at me. And I looked at him, and I was a little bit freaked out. And then I said, "Can I come in?" And he said, "Sure." So I said, "Thank you. I'll see you later." And I was like this, you know, walking off. Anyway, so then I go in, and as I'm walking, it was a magical place. The river does all these different things as you go along. Some places it's very quiet and easy. Other places it's raging. So as I go along, there's more creatures. There's these giant stones that dive down into the water themselves. And one looked kind of like an ancient sea turtle or something. It was gigantic, and he was diving into the water. And so this guy invited me to come sit on him, and so I had to hike way down to do that. And I sat on him, and the river was very raging at this point, and I just was feeling so much a part of it. I could see into the water, and the, you know how those stones underneath the water are? The depth was enough that I could jump in, and I kind of wanted to. Anyway, I sat there for a while, and then as I'm walking along the trail a little bit later, there I came, and suddenly I was stopped. And what I was stopped by was a giant spider web and this multicolored spider, and he was right in the center. And he said to me, "Don't do it, dude," because he'd spent a long time building that web, and I was just going to walk right through him. And so he said, "Please don't." It took me a long time to build this web. So I said, "Okay." And then I realized, wait a minute, I'm being guided and I'm supposed to go around. So I went down and around back onto the rocks and the water. And all of the cliff walls that come down into the river, they were all alive. There's faces. There's, I think I said before when I talked about this place, there's a history there that is undeniably a part of the stones, a part of the water, of I think ancient civilizations who have lived there and the spirits linger. You know, that's kind of how I am. That's what the Divine Mother is to me. It's all of this that speaks to me. So anyway, I spent some time there, and as I'm sitting on the rocks and meditating with the water, feeling the earth, the water, everything about where I'm at, totally in the present moment, it began to rain. And the rain was really sweet because of all that smoke. And it didn't rain intensely, just enough to bring the water onto me. And the rocks got very slippery. And as I'm leaving out of there, you know, I was very careful. But I was communicating with all of these things, and they were communicating with me. And there was other things that were happening that I wasn't even aware of in the microbiology that exists in nature. So not being aware of that, but being aware that I'm being fed in some very deep way. I got back up to the trail and avoided that spider. I knew where he was, so I went back through the woods into a creek and along up back to the trail. And then as I'm leaving, I passed the same giant tree. And then I came to my friend, the fairy. And this time, he was not shy. I mean, he was watching me and interacting with me. And when I say he was talking to me, I'm not hearing a voice. I'm sensing a communication. Because we're all endowed with that ability to connect deeply with nature in the way that we can glean its communication with us. So anyway, I was just at this point, like literally like a little kid, like, this is so cool that this fairy is here. And his head was moving and he was watching me walk and I was watching him walk. And then I said, can I go? And he said, of course, you know, in that kind, gentle way. And it could have been very scary, but it wasn't. It was very enriching in some way where I had to go beyond my fear and my shadow, like we talked about before. This trail teaches me about the shadow. But this thought came to me as I was leaving. I thought about safety. Was I safe there? Because people die there. There's even a sign that says, be careful, people die here. Literally, they don't want you dying, and people do, and they have to go down and get the bodies out. So I thought, am I safe? And what is keeping me safe? And this little idea just popped into my mind. Providence is the only thing that ever makes us safe. So I've really thought about providence. It's what I wanted to share today about three things: providence, ignorance, and liberation. Those are three very deep subjects and seemingly not interwoven, but they are. And I'll tell you how I have come to realize this for myself. I thought about that a lot, how people are very scared today, and about how can I know that I'm gonna be okay, that I'm not gonna die, that I'm not gonna get sick, that I'm not going to, you know, get some kind of a disease or lose my ability to do something that I really want to do? And the answer is you can't. But even if any of those things happen, providence has you. And that's what I came to learn on that trail. Providence is the only thing that ever keeps us safe. So I said, Jesus, how do I tell the people about providence? And he said, don't worry, buddy. We're going to take care of it. And so a Bible verse came to me right away. And it has to do with which of you by worrying can add a single anything to your life. So I just want to read it to you. I found it. It's in Luke on chapter 12. And it's literally entitled, Do Not Worry. He said to his disciples, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. For life is more than food and the body more than clothing. Consider the ravens. They neither reap nor they sow. They don't do either. They neither sow nor reap. They have neither storehouse nor barn, and yet God feeds them. You ever thought about that? I have thought about that so much. When I see the robins congregating outside, finding the little worms in the lawn, they don't know I'm watching. Of how much more value are you than the birds? Sometimes I question that. And can any of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your span of life? If, then, you are not able to do as small of a thing as that, why do you worry about the rest? Why do I? Why do you? Why do we even worry? It seems so simple. Yet try to do it, right? When we go out into the world, try not to worry when you wake up in the morning. What was I worried about? I'm sure it was something. Okay, let's see. Consider the lilies, he says. Nature again. How they grow. They neither toil nor spin, yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not clothed like one of these. The best that we can do as human beings doesn't take care of us like a lily who lets go. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? And do not keep striving for what you are to eat and what you are to drink, and do not keep worrying, Jesus tells us. For it is the nations of the world that strive after all these things, and your Father knows that you need them. God already knows that you need that stuff. Instead, strive for his kingdom, and these things will be added to you. Isn't that the teaching, the providence teaching that says, don't worry? We say, but I complain about it. But God, what about this? I'm not going to have enough of this or that. Have I ever not had lunch? I think about that all the time. Not once in my life that I can remember have I ever not had lunch. You know, it's always come. Everything that I need is always there. So what's in the way? What's in the way of living in provenance? Well, I think it's ignorance. And ignorance, like, bad? Like, I'm ignorant? No. You know, it was the, as I get into the Bible more and kind of study it more, I realize all of Jesus's teachings revolve around helping people to see their own ignorance. Not bad, just ignorance as in, oh, I didn't know that. Thank you for pointing it out. In fact, the Buddha said, there's one sin, and it's ignorance. I just didn't know. But I go on pretending like I do, and that's what causes my suffering. And it's what's in the way of allowing providence to lead. So it's this fighting against the need to separate, the need to possess, the need to be better than, the need to be different from, the need to be distinct from. You know, Ram Dass, in a thing that I was given actually through Craig Hamborg by his wife, he's got a little CD called Conscious Aging. And he talks about these wonderful things around aging. And he says, God, let me become irrelevant so I can do my inner work. Let me become somebody that nobody wants to talk to so I can actually contact who I truly am. Instead of working so hard to become somebody, to become something, to prove something to the world. So last night, you know how it goes, I share with you all the time that the once I open up to the teaching, it comes from all different angles. And so I want to introduce to you a documentary movie that you might enjoy if you're a nature person. And I found it on Amazon Prime, though it's probably other places. And it's called Call of the Forest, Forgotten Wisdom of Trees. And every time I see a title like that, my mind makes up this thing, oh, that won't be interesting, it's just about trees. It's just trees. And oh my gosh, I watched probably the first half an hour of this, and there's a woman on there, I don't remember any of the names, but I'm gonna share with you some of the points because they're so pertinent to providence and ignorance and liberation. And so this woman is a very accomplished botanist, and she's older, lives in Canada, and has just really understood the interaction of nature, of all these things, of how human beings are completely interdependent with every living thing on Earth. And the most prolific living thing on Earth is, guess what? Bacteria. Strange thing, isn't it? Be careful with antibacterial soap. I'm telling you, we think it's good for some things, but it destroys other things. So how do we know what's good and what's bad? You know, there's a study that came out, a scientist talked about bacteria. And I don't know if you're aware, but there's, I think in Mexico, mass birds are falling dead out of the sky, just falling dead, and piles of them in the streets. And there's something happening with the Earth's magnetic field, it's weakening. And there is a link that scientists have found between bacteria and the sixth sense, what we call the sixth sense, intuition, whatever you want to call it, that all of the bacteria on planet Earth is interconnected. So intuition is largely our bacteria sensing other bacteria. And it really makes sense. We always say, well, how do birds and giant flocks, how do they know where to go together? And when you think about it from microbiology within them, it makes perfect sense. It's almost like they're receiving a radio signal before their thinking minds can ever get it. How slow are our thinking minds? And in our ignorance, we get self-propelled by our wounds. And so we try to avoid getting wounded again. So we're living from the neck up, completely on the surface, never going into the depths of our being. And so in this movie, she talks about the bacteria of the earth, the microbiology, the emanations of trees. Trees emit all kinds of medicine. There's a lot of Japanese people in this movie, and they're scientists and people who have worked in this world for a long time. And there's one Japanese scientist who realized what was happening in Tokyo, where all of Tokyo was becoming concrete. Can't even see any trees. And the forests where they were taking, our forests in the world are getting diminished to the point where, like, literally from 100% to 5%. And so they knew that there was medicine in these trees. And so this guy has set out to plant mini forests in the space of 2 meters, to plant a mini forest all over Tokyo, where there's schools and other places that will let him do it. And all these people are working with him to do this. And as he stops people on the streets and he shows them the forest, they say, "Oh, I didn't see that." And they start to play in it, and they separate the branches and they take a big whiff and they feel better. The Japanese people call this forest bathing, and they know the benefits of it. So this woman who made the movie, she talks about all of these scientific terms in there that she's studied in her life that trees and the microbiome of the earth give to us. This is amazing stuff, because you say, well, what's spiritual about that? Everything. Because life is interconnected at the biggest level, but also at the most micro level that we cannot see, yet that lives our life. What did Zach Bush say about a plate of food? He said, you don't digest that food, your bacteria does. Everything must be kept in harmony. And so they showed where a forest, another Japanese scientist got interested. Why did this forest, when they logged it, kill the entire forest and the ocean life underneath it that the forest went into? And it came down to some molecule in there that the kelp needed to survive. And when they destroyed the microbiome, the humus of the earth, the stuff that eats itself, when they destroyed it, no longer could the sea live. And then everything became a barren wasteland. And it was very sad for everybody. So they started to work to repair it. And they showed another gal who did the same thing, where there was a creek and all the loggers came, and they just, when they left a mess. They destroyed the creek. The trees were covering the water passage. All of the fish died. Well, some human beings came in. This is in America. And they cleared it. And within a couple of years, this place is this gorgeous flowing water. You can see right through it with all these fish. And the woman explains scientifically what the trees had done, and everything came back into harmony. So one of the other most prolific things around is viruses. And viruses have been around for a long, long time. And what happens is, when we try to kill things off, this is what we're doing. Everything that I've shared with you today, in my view. You know, I get some really cool emails from different people, and a gal who sends me some fun stuff sent me this little email, and she said, I thought this was interesting. It was about an Amish fellow who was being interviewed. And they said, well, so how is your community doing with COVID-19? And he said, oh, well, we don't have COVID-19 because we don't have TV. And, you know, that's a weird thing to say, isn't it? What is happening there, and what about that works and doesn't work for you when you think about it? I don't have a bias about it. I just think it's very interesting. So we've got this connection between the earth. You know, when I went to Ananda Farms, and I'm very curious, because how do I control insects in my vegetable garden? And how the heck do I get my soil to work right? And when I was there, everything is beautiful. And there's a couple things that are being eaten by bugs. And I said to Zach, how do you control the bugs? He goes, oh, you don't have to control the bugs when you feed the soil. It knows what to do. It's why we don't till, he says. I said, oh, well, how come you don't till? Because I till my gardens, and they never work. He said, what happens when you till is that the life that comes up to eat all the stuff that's decomposing retreats. And then it's got this far to go instead of this far. So he said, instead you feed the soil, and it knows what to do, and the bugs and everything come into alignment. He said, sometimes, and he walks me to the end of an aisle of beautiful, perfect food, and he's got a couple leaves that are being eaten, and he just picks them up and puts them on the ground. And then the ground eats it and provides for the insects. And there's this interharmonious thing that happens. And when I'm there and I'm breathing the air and listening to him talk about how the land gardens him, he is being done. And he knows it. It's called natural farming. And it's a way of coming into harmony. And this is what we do on a mental level. We try to take care of our own stuff. We try to kill it, destroy it, beat it, avoid it. All the crap that we do in our own minds to try to stop the pain of our wounds. And so I want to share with you another fellow who came to me through the Center of Action and Contemplation. This guy's name is, he's a lama. His name is Rod Owens. And Richard Rohr says he's a black, queer, American-born Tibetan Buddhist teacher. He's got a lot going on. Who was raised also in the Christian church and graduated from Harvard Divinity School. This guy's, you can tell, he's got a lot of depth. And this is what he said about healing, and I just wanted to share his direct quote. He said, healing is movement and work toward wholeness. He said, healing is never a definite location, but something in process. It is the basic ordinary work of staying engaged with our own hurt and limitations, not avoiding them. Healing does not mean forgiveness either, though that is often the result. Healing is knowing our woundedness. It is developing an intimacy with the ways in which we suffer. Healing is learning to love the wound because love draws us into relationship with it, instead of avoiding feeling the discomfort. You see, the problem that I've learned for myself in my own life that I make with my healing journey is that I try to avoid it. But if I will turn back into it like the fairy, instead of avoiding it, running out of there, I turn back into it and say, what is it that you have to teach me? There's always a teaching, and it's always aligned with providence because the world wants to help you. And when we resist that, when I resist my healing because I think there's a better way, I suffer in fear. Something my therapist said to me about, I said, I've come to a place where there's another locked cellar door and I don't know how to break the lock. And she said that lock is always fear. And I didn't think about it like that. What am I afraid of? So I open up again into my own ignorance and move into it like a moth to the flame. And I say, take me, God, I'm ready. And so what does all this have to do with liberation? Well, can you see when we deal with it, whether it's the earth, whether it's how we've come to regard our mother earth, whether it's the ideas, our father principle in mind, how we've come to what ideas we allow to rent space in our minds, the relationships I have, when I confront it, instead of trying to avoid it or make somebody else wrong, suddenly I experience liberation. It's the result. You know, when the Buddha sat, when Siddhartha Gautama sat underneath the Bodhi tree and he said, I'm going to sit here until something happens, and he became enlightened. And the townspeople said, what is that fellow doing? And so they came up and they said, are you a god? He said, no. They said, are you a man? He said, no. Are you an angel? I am not. They said, well, if you're not a man and you're not a god and you're not an angel, then what are you? And he said, I am awake. We awaken to the greater reality that is trying to provide for us. And we get healed from the ignorant wounds that we have put in place ourselves. Not that we're bad people trying to get good, but that we're misguided people trying to come into alignment with the great principle of divine flow. And so I welcome you to the journey. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. I miss a round of applause after you're done speaking. You know, it's too quiet in here. Well, that was really powerful. I felt like I was trying to get a drink of water out of a fire hose while you were talking through that. That information just, whew. So you might want to watch this virtual service again after it gets posted to Facebook, because there was a lot there. So, all right, well, let's sing together again. I think that Savannah has the words posted for you.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Yes, great talk, Kevin.
Thank you.
That was one of the best ones I've heard in a long time.
Yay, thank you.
Maybe because you talked about fairies.
Yes.